Sander will be speaking about the matter of dukkha, which we didn't finish yesterday. And allow us to emphasize that the special issue or the most important point in Buddhism is the one about anatta and anatta, or self and not self. If the five khandhas, the five aggregates of life, are mixed up with upadana, with grasping and clinging, then there will be dukkha. But if the upadana, the khandhas, are seen correctly as anatta, then there won't be this dukkha. And so all dukkha can be summarized as grasping and clinging at the five aggregates of life. Now there are two things here that we should observe. First, if there's just the five khandhas, or we could say the mere khandhas, just the khandhas by themselves, without any attachment, any upadana involved, then there's nothing tormenting about that. There's no dukkha experience regarding that. However, there is a quality or characteristic of dukkha within the five khandhas. This is an important thing to understand. There is, because each of these five khandhas is impermanent, unstable, and constantly changing, that has a quality of dukkha to it. However, this quality of dukkha does not torment. But if anything goes and grasps or clings to these five khandhas, then because of that attachment, these five khandhas will be a torment for that one who grasps at them, whoever or whatever grasps at them, or we could say their owner, will suffer because of that grasping and clinging. But if it's just the five khandhas, then there is no experience of torment or suffering. There is just the characteristic of dukkha that is inherent in all conditioned things. For example, with the natural conditions of birth, age, illness, and death, these in themselves are not inherently suffering. When nothing is attaching to birth, age, illness, and death as my birth, my age, my illness, my death, then they're not a problem. Then there is just this characteristic of dukkha in birth, age, illness, and death. But as soon as something grabs on as my birth, my age, my illness, my death, because of that upadana, then birth, age, illness, and death become a source of torment and suffering. So birth, age, illness, and death are not in themselves suffering. But they do have this characteristic of dukkha. And so if we are stupid enough to take them to be I or mine, then this becomes suffering for the owner of that birth, age, illness, and death. Or then those naturally occurring conditions of sorrow, lamentation, pain, misery, and grief. These examples of these things are not necessarily suffering for one. Only if these are not taken as mine, my sorrow, my grief, my pain, my misery, or they're not identified with, I am the pain, I am the misery, I am the grief, and so on. If this doesn't happen, then they're just naturally occurring things, and they do not torment, they do not cause suffering, but they do have this quality of dukkha. But if one is foolish enough to, if we take them as me or as mine, then these become a source of suffering. And the suffering arises not from the things themselves, but from this me that gets involved, this me or mine that gets caught up, that messes up these natural things. Or with the kinds of dukkha which arise from from craving. We meet up, we experience things that we don't like. We are separated from the things we love, we like. And we desire things and then don't get them. These are the kinds of dukkha that come from craving, from thirst. But notice, in all of these there is the we. It's me that experiences what I don't like. It's me that is separated from the things that I love. It's me that has desires and doesn't get what I want. And so it's because the attachment comes into all this that these are suffering for the mind. Because of that craving, attachment always gets involved. And so we attach to the experiencing, we attach to the separation, we attach to the not getting. And so this is always dukkha for us. Because of that craving, there is always this attachment to it. But if there was no we to experience, no I to experience, no I to be separated, no I to not get what it wants, then there wouldn't be any torment, any pain for the mind. For example, if we're with someone who's our enemy, and then we think, my enemy, then there's a lot of dukkha involved. But if we meet someone who is our enemy, but we've forgotten that this person is our enemy, then there's no dukkha. There's no my enemy. There's no problem. Or with people we love, when we are thinking of I love this or that or this person, then there will be dukkha if from the separation from that person. But if we've forgotten that we love this person or thing, then there's no dukkha involved. Or not getting things that we desire. This is only dukkha because of the I that desires. Because the I comes in, the my comes in, there is the experiencing of what we don't like and the separation from what we love. and the not getting what we desire. It's because this I, this mind, comes in that these things, this experiencing what we don't like, this not getting what we, or this separation from the loved, the beloved, and the not getting what we want, these all occur because attachment, this sense of I and mine, the feeling that things are I or mine, has arisen. Just if we meet my enemy that is suffering, or if we just hear the name of my enemy, then that is suffering. Or even to read their name in the newspaper, that is suffering in the form of anger or hatred or aversion or something like this, makes that owner, the attacher, suffer. If there's no sense of this I or mine, none of this occurs. There's just the quality or characteristic of dukkha. The thing itself, that person in themselves, is not suffering, but it becomes suffering. The person becomes suffering for us because of the my. The I or my gets involved. And then because of this attachment, there is the mind, or the owner experiences suffering. But just the thing in itself has only the characteristics of dukkha and nothing more. So let's take another look at these five aggregates, starting with rupa, or the body, the bodily system. This body is just a bunch of processes or physical functions. And in all this, in the body, there's constant change, there's instability, there's decay. So there is a quality of dukkha. But that's just the body. The body is dukkha in itself or for itself. But that's all that's happening. If something does something to the body, it's just something happening to the body. But if attachment arises and it becomes my body, then it's no longer something happening to the body, it's something happening to me. And this is where the suffering arises. For example, if a knife cuts a finger, we don't just see it as a knife cutting a finger. We always experience that a knife cutting me. The knife cut me. The knife cut me. Not just something happening to the body, but something happening to me. Because the attachment, the I, the ego, gets in there. It becomes suffering for the owner of the me and mine. The body has a nervous system which is used to pick up or sense stimulation from the outside world. And it's just the nervous system that functions in certain ways. It's just part of the body. But we never see the nervous system as just part of the body, or just a nervous system. It's not, we don't see it that the nervous system picks up the stimuli or is sensitive to the stimuli. It's always my nervous system. I am aware of the stimuli. I am the one sensing things. It's not the nervous system sees, hears, and so on. It's always I. And so then the sense activity becomes suffering. The sensual experience, the activity of the nervous system, is turned into suffering. If this sense of ego, this I and mine, is too strong, it can lead to, it can be really, really ridiculous somewhat. It can be like, lead to a kind of hysteria. For example, one child was scratched by a thorn and no blood came out in the least. There was just a scratch with no blood, and the child fainted. Another child was scratched by the thorn and thought nothing of it, just a scratch. But the first child, because of the sense of ego, this scratch, the child thought it was going to die. There really wasn't anything there, but it, because of the attachment, was so strong, thought it was going to die and fainted. Whereas the other child didn't think anything of being scratched. This is an example of how this, when this ego gets strong, too strong, it can lead to almost, it can lead to insanity. This is an example that's happened to us. Or when I was young, I was playing with a friend at the garbage pile, and my friend picked up some paper that had some red ink on it. And then when he saw the red ink on his hand, he thought it was blood, and he went running home to his mother thinking he was going to die. I'm going to die. The actual physical situation was just some red ink on the hand. But because of ego coming in, because of attachment, it was turned into a lot of suffering. In the Rupa Khanda, the body aggregate, there is constant change, constant transformation. And that's just what's happening for the body. That's just the body's thing. And there's no suffering involved in that change and decay and whatever. But when we give it the meaning, when we buy into the meaning that it is I or mine, then that change, that decay of the body is suffering, it's torment for the one who attaches. The body in itself is just doing its natural thing. But if ever this deeper meaning is given to things, then that deeper meaning of I, of mine, it doesn't matter whether it's I or mine, it's both of these, the sense of I, the sense of mine, are upadana, and it inevitably is suffering. The body itself is not suffering. Or we can talk about vedana khanda, the feeling aggregates, the feelings of that are pleasant feelings, unpleasant feelings, and the hard to determine feelings. We never see the feelings as just a mechanism of the nervous system, which has certain survival value. We can never see it this way. It's always has to be, I feel pleased, I feel displeased, or my pleasure, my displeasure, my happiness, my pain. We aren't able to see it as merely a natural process of the nervous system. The vedana are just things that happen of themselves. we're unable to do that, we're always taking it as I, as mine. And so we just take something natural and ordinary and give it extra meaning. And this causes suffering. This attachment turns the feelings into a problem. We make all kinds of difficulties out of them. The feelings in themselves, the vedana in themselves, are no problem. It's because of this attachment to them is I and mine, that there is suffering because of them. This I and mine is not real. It's not true. It's an illusion. But it's something that we feel. And so because we feel this I and mine, it has the ability, it becomes suffering. But it doesn't have any real reality. There's no real I and mine there. So with these feelings, there's something that we give meaning to. And because of that meaning, we take them to be I, take them to be mine. Sometimes our foolishness leads to a direct identity with pleasure, with pain, or with that hard to determine kind of feeling. Other times stupidity takes the form of taking these things to be mine, my pleasure, my pain, and so on. Because this I in mind is an illusion, it's not true. But because it's something because we feel it, but it's not true, then there is suffering arising from it. Then the next two khandhas, Sanya Khanda and Sankara Khanda, it works in basically the same way. There is perception, and then this is taken to be I perceive, or it can be attached to as my perception, and then this becomes suffering. These things are perceived in a certain way, and then that is attached to, that is taken to be true and real and clung to. And this clinging is attachment. Or there is conception. Things are conceived in a certain way. There is thought conception. Things are thought of in this way or that way. And then there is attachment, is either I who conceives, the conceiver, the thinker, or my thoughts, my conceptions, my ideas. Either way, there's an illusion here, but we don't see the illusion. We think it's actually true. And so the illusion of sanya and sankara occurs, and it's attached to as I, as mine, attaching to the perceptions and the conceptions. And then this is the result of that illusion. And because of this attaching, it is I and mine, there is suffering. Sanya Khanda and Sankara Khanda are turned into suffering by attachment. Or with the fifth aggregate, Vijnana, consciousness. If we take Vijnana to be some kind of self or a soul or spirit, as in the Hindu belief, then that will always be suffering. To take Vijnana to be a self or soul, that will always lead to suffering. But if Vijnana is realized as just being the consciousness of sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touches, and mental objects, if it's, Vijnana is known as just this consciousness, this direct knowing of the sense objects, then there's no suffering. But if I comes in and turns it into I am conscious or my consciousness, then we've gone back to that soul or that spirit or self or whatever, and that brings suffering. And then all kinds of problems happen, and everything is made, life becomes a mess because of this I, this mind, or self, soul, ego, whatever we want to call it. As we said earlier, Thailand has received a lot of influence from India, especially in religious matters. And so that Hindu teachings or Brahmanistic teachings came to Thailand before the Buddhist teachings came. And so way back when, we don't know exactly when, the teachings came to Thailand about a certain kind of vijnana, which is what in English we call a spirit or a soul. Now it's often called the Atman in Sanskrit, the Atman, which is a kind of spirit or soul. And what was taught was that there is this vijnana, this spirit, and it has a center place. Sometimes it's said to be in the heart. And then the vijnana rests there. And then when an object comes to the eye, the vijnana runs out to the eye in order to see it. Or a sound comes in, the vijnana runs to the ear to hear the sound. And the vijnana is always going out to these different things. But it's always the same vijnana. So it's some kind of soul or spirit. And then when we go to sleep, this vijnana is said to leave the body and go wandering around. And then when we wake up, the vijnana comes back. If the vijnana comes back, we can't wake up. And if we're unconscious, then the vijnana goes off somewhere, but we don't know where. This is what has been taught in Thailand before Buddhism came. But in Buddhism, there's none of this. It's just the momentary consciousness at the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, or mind sense. This is all that is meant by vijnana. But so many people have received this older teaching from India, that's what is understood. And so words like vijnana are taken to mean spirit or soul, some eternal substance that is knowing all these things. This is what has happened in Thailand. This kind of belief in vijnana has occurred. And to put it bluntly, it's completely a matter of ignorance. It's a complete misunderstanding to attribute consciousness to some soul or spirit, as has happened for many people here in this country. Exactly what the situation is in Europe, we don't know. You probably haven't received the same kind of influence from India. But maybe things aren't so different, because in European languages, we still find words like soul, spirit, and self. So it's possible that the same kind of misunderstanding is common in the West as well as here. If vijnana is conceived or understood or felt to be some kind of self or soul or spirit or lasting substance, then that That is not the Buddhist teaching. That's a Hindu teaching or something else. But if vijnana is understood, is seen to be merely a momentary flash of consciousness in relation to some sense object, then that is the correct teaching in true Buddhism. If a vijnana is attached to, in the first way, as being I or mine, as being some kind of self, then that inevitably is suffering. Whereas if vijnana is understood correctly, seen correctly, then there's no suffering. There's just that momentary consciousness arising and passing away. This is what Buddhism teaches. Please be very careful to understand this point correctly, because many people are careless and confuse the two, and then don't know what Buddhism is, and don't know what other religions and other philosophies, or what other religions and certain philosophies are saying. True Buddhism teaches, because of everything we've discussed so far, true Buddhism teaches to remove the sense of I in mind from the five khandhas. Please listen to this carefully. Write it down if you've got paper. What Buddhism is teaching, the genuine teaching of Buddhism, and if something contradicts this, then it's not Buddhism. Buddhism teaches to pull out that sense of I and mine, to pull it out of the five khandhas, remove the sense of I and mine from the five khandhas. So then there are just the five khandhas. There's just life occurring naturally, without any upadana, without any I or mine making it heavy, making life into a problem. So removing the sense of I and mine from the khandhas, this is the heart of Buddhism. This is the central teaching of the Buddha. We'd like to take this opportunity to speak straightforward and direct and say something that ought to save you a lot of trouble, time, and even money. Most of you, if not all of you, have been deceived by a bunch of books which have been given such silly names as Buddhism in Thailand, Buddhism in Burma, Buddhism in Sri Lanka, Buddhism in Tibet, Buddhism in China, Buddhism in Japan, and even Buddhism in America. There are all these books that are deceiving people, trying to talk about something that doesn't really even exist. Any of these books that are talking about Buddhism in Thailand or Buddhism in Sri Lanka or Buddhism who knows where, they're just talking about some illusion. They're not really talking about Buddhism at all. If we buy these books and believe what they're telling us, then we'll never figure out what Buddhism is. Because all these books are just about a bunch of crazy cultural practices from whatever country it is. Just the things the Thais do, or the crazy things the Tibetans do, or the crazy things now that they do in the West. And that has very little, if anything, to do with Buddhism. It's a bunch of ceremonies, it's a bunch of beliefs, it's a bunch of superstitions. It's all kinds of stuff. If you buy a book on Buddhism, there's no need to stick the words in Tibet or in Thailand or in Burma on the end of it. If it's a book about Buddhism, it will talk only about one thing. removing attachment from the five khandhas. This is the nucleus of Buddhism. The rest of that stuff that they fill up these books with and rip off the unsuspecting public with is just a bunch of superficial cultural stuff. It's not Buddhism. It's just who knows what. And so you can save yourself the time and the trouble. There's no need buying any of these books and wasting our time with them. We've taken some time ourselves to, the same goes with the superficial distinctions between Theravada Buddhism, Mahayana Buddhism, Vajrayana Buddhism, and Zen Buddhism. To the superficialist or the Western scholar, they seem to be different things. But if it's Buddhism, it's all just one thing. There's only one Buddhism. Buddhism can't be fragmented into these different things. And so, if we can, we would like to point this out to save everyone a lot of trouble. Real Buddhism is just one moving attachment, getting rid of that I and mine within the five khandhas, or regarding the five khandhas.